Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Raw Deal, where I expect to be joined momentarily by Nick Kohlerstrom. We have much to discuss about what's going on in Ukraine, where I'm simply staggered by the irrationality of the West, which is a manifestation of the might makes right philosophy that seemed to predominate here, where no one gives a damn about international law, treaties, solemn agreements. We have most frontline Ukrainian soldiers killed within 4 hours of their arrival at the front. The reports are very, very bad. We have pizza being ordered, and when the pizza boy shows up, he's conscripted and put out of the field, and within 4 hours, he's dead. A retired Marine fighting in Ukraine told ABC the front lines are a meat grinder where soldiers survive an average of 4 hours. Troy Offenbacher is fighting alongside Ukrainian forces in the Donbass region, where Moscow and Kiev have been battling around Bakhmut for several months as Russian forces have slowly made gains around the city, which I believe is going to turn out to be the decisive battle of the war. In January, Germany estimated Kiev was losing a three-digit number of soldiers daily fighting for Bakhmut. At the time, the White House believes Zelensky was committing too many lives and resources to defend the city. Offenbacher's commentary suggests the situation may be getting worse for Ukrainian soldiers. It's been pretty bad on the ground. A lot of casualties, the life expectancy around 4 hours on the front line. He said the Russian attack on the city is not letting up and it turned into a meat grinder. The artillery is nonstop. Offenbacher explained the Russian forces are fighting around the clock. The Russians may have run into a shortage of shells likely, but the past couple of weeks it's been nonstop all day and night, he told ABC. Let me add, by the way, as an aside, as a former Marine Corps artillery officer, most casualties in war are inflicted by artillery. It's not by the infantry, it's not hand-to-hand combat, it's by artillery. And as I've been reporting for several weeks now, even Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, has declared that Ukraine is using up munitions faster than NATO can produce them. That's a losing situation. And, of course, Mike Adams weeks ago reported how the U.S. were engaged in a conventional war with Russia, had already lost, because we cannot set up our own production facilities for munitions in less than a year to 2 years. And at that point in time, it's already done, signed, sealed, over. Meanwhile, Kiev's Western backers have expressed to Zelensky that NATO countries are struggling to find artillery shells to send to Ukraine. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said the U.S. will train Ukrainian forces on fighting methods that use fewer munitions. Think about it. We're going to tell them how to fight the war without any munitions, without any artillery or mortar shells. The Kremlin ordered a mobilization of 300 troops last year. Western leaders have anticipated Moscow will order an offensive this winter. Ukrainian officials said it's now underway, and Offenbecker agrees. With the amount of shelling, the amount of armor they brought in, I think it started, he explained to ABC. Due to Moscow and Kiev's tight control over their country's presses, it's unclear how substantial the death toll is for each country. Since the start of the war, Zelensky has nationalized Ukraine's media, outlawed his political opposition, and jailed citizens who oppose his administration. Now, remember, this is the guy the Western media is touting as a champion of freedom and democracy. Since the start of the war, I repeat, Zelensky has nationalized Ukraine's media, meaning there's no free press. It's all controlled by the government. Outlawed his political opposition, meaning no political parties in opposition to Zelensky are permitted. That's the definition of democracy we get out of Ukraine. And jailed citizens who oppose his administration, shades of January 6th. Ukraine appears to be no more of a democracy than the United States. We're a fake, we're a fraud, we're a phony, it's embarrassingly bad. Commenting on the state of journalism in Ukraine, press union leader Sheely Goose explained, "We never know what the basis for these accusations, what's a pro-Russian link. It's starting to look like a political accusation rather than a genuine crime. A lot of journalists self-censor now," he added. Meanwhile, Zelensky aide explains why Ukraine won't let him leave. "Human rights take a backseat to obligations of the state," Mikhail Podolyak told German TV. Ukrainian President Zelensky's top aide has defended Kiev's decision to ban men from leaving the country, saying otherwise they could run away. "Fleeing the draft means wanting the country to be destroyed," Mikhail Podolyak told the German state outlet DW. Let's be blunt here. No need to speculate. What does the restriction of rights mean? Do people in Ukraine not have obligations also, or are we just talking about rights? He told DW in an interview making the rounds on social media. The state has a duty to provide things. Let people travel. Let people live as they wish. Yes, in peacetime, he continued, but in wartime? That's not a question to raise. Do you want to cross the border? That means you want Ukraine to stop existing because you cross the border. Because when you say open the border for men, that means opening the border so they can run away from the manly choice. And they want to run away. His comments came as some Western outlet pointed out the aggressive mobilization tactics of the Kiev government. A report in The Economist Sunday referred to the case of a man missing both hands since childhood, but the draft office insisted he was fit to serve until social media uproar forced them to relent. How absurd is that? After the conflict in Donbass escalated last year. Zelensky imposed martial law and banned Ukrainian males age 18 to 60 from leaving the country. Since then, there have been several waves of mobilization as Kiev sought to rebuild units shattered in the fighting. Recruiters have moved from serving summons on one's doorstep to violently enforcing them in the streets, at shopping centers, even at military funerals, according to The Economist. Meanwhile, there have been reports of people bribing officials to dodge the draft, paying to be smuggled out of the country. Lawyers for some of the unjustly mobilized received summonses themselves, preventing them from practicing law. This is a bastion of freedom and democracy being heroized, lauded by the American media. Kiev is likely to ramp up recruitment of less motivated Ukrainians, the outlet said, as it hopes to launch a massive offensive before the summer using heavy weapons provided by the U.S. and its ally. Not likely. Not likely. Meanwhile, Zelensky says Ukraine is preparing to attack Crimea. Victoria Nuland says the U.S. supports attacks on the peninsula. Ukrainian President Zelensky said Friday Ukraine is preparing to launch attacks to recapture Crimea by forming new military units and sending troops to train in other countries. Fat chance. There are military steps, and we are preparing for them. We are ready mentally. We are preparing technically with weapons, reinforcement, the formation of brigades, in particular the assault brigades of different categories and natures, Zelensky said at a press conference. According to the Ukrainian news agency Ukrinform, Zelensky said Ukrainian troops are being sent to train in other countries to learn how to use new weapons. We have to be ready. Then there will be corresponding fair deoccupation steps, and God willing, they will be successful. Zelensky and other top Ukrainian officials have maintained that kicking Russia out of Crimea is one of their war goals. But Russia controls a good portion of territory to the north of Korea in the Kherson Oblast. The Pentagon has also assessed it's unlikely Ukraine can take the peninsula, which Russia has controlled since 2014. Despite the Pentagon's assessment, Biden admin officials say they would still support Ukrainian attacks on Crimea. Russia has turned Crimea into a massive military installation. Those are legitimate targets. Ukraine is hitting them, and we are supporting that. Victoria Nuland, U.S. Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, recently observed. The U.S. backing Ukrainian attacks on Crimea would risk a major escalation with Moscow, a fact that even Secretary of State Antony Blinken has recognized by calling the peninsula a red line for Russian President Putin. The Russian leader has shown a willingness to escalate the war over attacks on Crimea, as Russia's bombardment of Ukrainian infrastructure didn't start until after the truck bombing of the Kerch Bridge, which connects Crimea to the Russian mainland. Russia annexed Crimea in 2014 following the U.S.-backed coup in Kiev that ousted former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. Polling since then has shown the majority of people living in the peninsula are happy they have joined the Russian Federation. Meanwhile, former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev has said the West pumping weapons into Ukraine could bring about an apocalypse, warning that Moscow is willing to use nuclear weapons to defend itself. In an op-ed published Sunday, the Western policy of pouring weapons into Ukraine could lead to a nuclear apocalypse. One could continue to pump weapons into the neo-fascist Kiev regime and block any opportunity to revive negotiation, Medvedev wrote in the Russian newspaper, Izvestia. Our enemies are doing just that, not wanting to understand that their goals obviously lead to a total fiasco. Lose for everyone. Collapse. Apocalypse. When a former life will have to be forgotten for centuries until the smoky blockages cease to emit radiation. Yes, which could be hundreds of years. Last October, Biden made a similar assessment, warning the chances of nuclear Armageddon were higher than at any time since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. Despite his acknowledgement, Biden has only escalated U.S. involvement in the war in Ukraine and hasn't taken steps to reduce tensions with Moscow. Medved, who currently serves as deputy to the Russian Security Council, has been warning throughout the war that it could spiral into a nuclear conflict between NATO and Russia. Last week, he said Russia is willing to defend itself with nuclear weapons in comments that came after Russian President Putin suspended Moscow's participation in the New START, which is the last remaining nuclear arms control treaty between the U.S. and Russia that limits the deployment of warheads and launchers. Russian officials have stressed Putin's move is temporary and that the treaty could be restored if the U.S. made an effort to de-escalate tensions over Ukraine. Putin has also said the treaty should take into account Britain's and France's nuclear arsenals, which I think is completely appropriate. Meanwhile, State of the Nation has published a completely brilliant piece about the historical background, well-hidden truths about the Kazarian-engineered Ukraine war, which you can find in full on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. This is one you don't want to miss. Beginning with a map of the seven new nations created after the collapse of the Russian Federation. In other words, Putin has reported he's already seen the maps of how Russia is going to be divided. Well, there it is. You can see it for yourself. The Caucasus Federation, Caspia, Russia, Volga, Baltica, Ural, Siberia, and Far East. Revenge number one. Allow us to forward a bit of chronological tables as we delve into the nitty-gritty behind the conflict. The Ashkenazism are the descendants of the Gentile Goy Ashkenaz, the Japhet. The sons of Japhet were Gomer, Javan, sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, Ripoff, and Tolmark, Genesis 10, 2.3. By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, Genesis 10.1. They are a resilient, roaming, Turkic people. They have a knack for reinventing themselves. They first serviced in world annals as a notoriously barbaric Scythians or Sakadians, depending on regional phonetics. Here, there is no Gentile or Judite, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, or free. But Christ is all and is in all. Colossians 3:11. Much of this has biblical root, but it appears to be historically authentic. The word Scythian or Sakadian comes from the word Saka, with its Iranian verbal root Sak, meaning to roam. Iranian Empire, then named Partha and abutting Scythia, influenced that word, and you'll see many maps of the past. The Scythians settled central Eurasia, which they conquered with their gentle brother, Togarmuth, and various other cousins, expanding across a vast tract of land that encompassed, but was not limited to parts of present-day Turkey and Iran. Their Gentile brother, Ripoff, along with their uncle, Javan's descendants, settled in Greece. Later on, they reinvented themselves and settled in a land they would call Khazaria, from the word Khazar, with its Turkish root Kaz, meaning to roam, following the breakup of the Western Turkish Empire. Then the country converted en masse to Judaism, Phariseeism, sometime between 740 and 920 AD, just so they could remain independent of the two competing empires of the time, Christianity and Islam. Judaism was the most actively proselytizing religion, explained Jewish historian Shlomo Sand. A most significant mass conversion occurred in the 8th century in the massive Khazar kingdom between the Black and Caspian Seas. And here we have another map of the region. Then, Svyatoslav I of Kiev destroyed Khazaria around 1048 and absorbed it into the Kievan Rus, a territory that would later become part of the Russian Empire. Then, Sevastopol of Kiev in Imperial Russia, the Ashkenazis were kept under tight control and enclosed in the Pale of Settlement, which, according to Wikipedia, was a western region of Russian Empire with varying borders that existed from 1791 to 1917, where permanent residency by Jews was allowed, and beyond which Jewish residency, permanent or temporary, was mostly forbidden. A treatment for which the Ashkenazism, a.k.a. the Never Forget, Never Forgive people, except for when they themselves commit crimes against humanity, never exculpated Russia. Biding their time, they nurtured their hatred and plotted their revenge along with a new reinvention. They became the power behind the heinous Bolsheviks, who took over the Russian government in the 1910s, killed 66 million Christians, including 200,000 members of the Christian clergy, and destroyed 40,000 churches. You must understand, the leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians, revealed famed Christian Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of human remorse. It cannot be overstated. Bolshevism committed the greatest human slaughter of all time. The fact that most of the world is ignorant and uncaring about this enormous crime is proof that the global media is in the hands of the perpetrators. The great majority of these vicious Bolsheviks were Ashkenazi Jews, such as Vladimir Lenin, Leon Trotsky, Lev Kamenev, Gregory Zinoviev, Yakov Sverdlov, and Grigory Skolnikov. They were financed by Ashkenazi bankers from New York and London, such as the Rothschild Bank and Jacob Schiff of Kuhn and Loeb and Company, who themselves championed the destructive ideology of the Ashkenazi Karl Marx and found it profitable to invest in communism's disastrous conquest of Russia, while making a few bucks in the process by plundering the country via well-placed agents who would later be known as oligarchs. Russia's entire Soviet empire collapsed in 1991. Thus, the Ashkenazim succeeded in bringing Russia to its knees. Revenge round one, done. Revenge two. Today, Russia is under fire for the conflict in Ukraine, a conflict that was started by the neocon Ashkenazi Victoria Nuland in the U.S. State Department, with her neocon Ashkenazi husband Robert Kagan working in the background, via powerful organizations such as Project for a New American Century, the Brookings Institution, and Council on Foreign Relations. Ashkenazi George Soros also contributed financially to the Ukrainian Maidan Revolution of 2014. Many of the participants in Kiev's Euromaidan demonstration were members of Soros-funded NGOs, or were trained by the same NGOs and the many workshops and conferences sponsored by Sornos International Renaissance Foundation and its various open society institutions and foundation, wrote William F. Jasper in The New American. The IRF, founded and funded by Soros, boasts that it has given more than any other donor organization to democratic transformation of Ukraine, a.k.a. neo-Nazism. In other words, Ashkenazism or the Jewish neocons are goading the Russian bear by wagging the American dog. The dog can't really decline because a Jewish lobbying group, AIPAC, has it by the groin, a.k.a. by the balls, bribing equally both the Republicans, Trump included, and the Democrats, or nothing but political whores willing to betray their country and risk the peace of the world. And remember, AIPAC is controlled by powerful Ashkenazi American business leaders. See how the Ashkenazi Jews conquer the West. Their sole purpose is to destroy Russia once again by starting a fire in its underbelly, Ukraine. A fire they're planning to spread into Russia proper via economic and military warfare, not unlike what they did to Germany with the economic boycott of 1933, followed by all-out military conflict. Why? One, because Russia had the gall to rise from its still warm Ashkenazi-induced ashes. Two, because Russia had the temerity to arrest their well-placed thieving agents known as the oligarchs, with many fleeing the country to apartheid Israel, where they can no longer rape Russia and steal its resources for the Jewish elite. Three, because Russia had the audacity to lead the American war on Syria, which was orchestrated by AIPAC for the benefit of Israel, a vile apartheid country that is fleecing the American people. Four, because David Stanton claims. We'll be back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Watch it.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm delighted to be joined by my dear friend, historian of science, Nick Kohlerstein, who has a new book about Ukraine, is Just War. And because Nick was on the other day with Mike Sparks, well, we had technical problems. Well, we heard a lot from Mike. We didn't hear enough from Nick. So I wanted to bring him back for us to review the bidding. Meanwhile, Nick, I'm going through an article about the background to Ukraine with the Ashkenazi Jews and reiterating why they're attempting a second revenge against Russia. You can find the whole article on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. But just to reiterate some key points about what's going on now, a second form of revenge against Russia by beginning a fire in its underbelly of Ukraine, planning to spread into Russia via economic and military warfare, not unlike they did with Germany in the boycott of 1933, followed by all-out military conflict. Why? And I began reiterating the key reason. First, because Russia had the gall to rise from its still-warm Ashkenazi-induced ashes. Second, because Russia had the temerity to arrest their well-placed thieving agents known as oligarchs, with many fleeing the country to apartheid Israel, where they can no longer rape Russia and steal its resources for the Jewish elite. Three, because Russia had the audacity to lead the American war in Syria, which was orchestrated by AIPAC for the benefit of Israel, a vile apartheid country that is fleecing the American people. Fourth, because as David Sand explains, Russia's position as a permanent member of the UN Security Council with a veto power has been a thorn in the paw of the Atlantist beast since the Cold War. Russia's willingness to use her military to defend allies in Syria, Ukraine, and Armenia presents an uncontrollable risk factor for Zionist Anglo-American hegemony. They cannot tolerate it. Russia has used her veto on the Security Council multiple times to block American warmongering. Fifth, because Russia threatens Ashkenazi Jewish domination of the U.S. dollar as a world reserve currency and as issued by the Jewish-controlled Federal Reserve, a monopoly Russia is undoing with its unexpected global reemergence, especially in Europe, Asia, and the Middle East, where trade with Russia bypasses the U.S. dollar. Such a comeback by the Russian bear is something the Jewish elite has been trying to impede since the dissolution of the Soviet Union. They have been relentless in their effort to keep the country down by erecting economic walls and later, under Putin, crippling sanctions to prevent such a scenario. And Eduardo Shinoy explains, the United States government, as the issuer of the world's reserve currency, is only interested in one thing, the proliferation of the U.S. dollar. The single fact is all one needs to grasp to truly understand U.S. foreign policy. Nick, I'd like to pick it up there with any thoughts you have on those reflections and all of your own. Plus, I want to share with you a recent contemplation by P.P. Escobar on how the U.S. is, you know, blundering into World War III, except it appears to...
As regards what you just said, Jim, I mean, I presume, I agree with everything you said. My book does not mention the J word, which you may say is a bit of a cop-out, but it is on Amazon. And if I put in half what you just said, it would have been banned by Amazon, you know? So that is the kind of compromise you may say. Having said that, I think Russia is very well aware of the hidden power of the Ashkenazi Khazars. That they know that in the last century, their royal family was killed by Jews, by Talmudic Jews, who said in advance they would do it, and then they did it. And Russians are very well aware of that. And I think Putin understands that diplomatically, he can't say any of that, you know. And you see pictures of getting on with Israelis and so on. But deep down, the Russians do know that, and they're not going to be taken in. They cannot be taken in. And this is partly, I think, why their country is so strongly Orthodox Eastern Christian these days. 75% identify as Orthodox Christian. And that is part of the very self-identity of Russia, okay? It's a culture predominantly white. You can call it multicultural, you know. It gets unhappily with Muslims and Jews in Russia. But it is keeping the majority white Eastern Orthodox Church, and it is proud of that. It's not ashamed of it. And I think that is part of the strength of the Russian culture. Like, will survive, and has got this terrific unity of motivation in this conflict. I mean, Russians know deep down in their blood that they have been invaded previously by Napoleon, who didn't succeed. They've been invaded previously by Hitler, who didn't succeed. And that they understand what, generally speaking, Europeans don't understand, that this march of NATO ever further eastwards is an assault upon the very existence of Russia. That is, so Putin has got a majority of Russians endorsing his view on that. Yeah.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Putin's been very explicit about the reasons for the special military intervention, including the idea that Ukraine could become a part of NATO, including that there was a massive assault on the Donbass about to take place that was going to slaughter hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of ethnic Russians and Russian-friendly residents of Ukraine. The biolabs, which were being designed genetically specifically to target Russia.
Exactly, yeah, right, yeah. But what you said about this projected genocide program, I find it so awesome the way the Western media has totally blocked this out from the narrative. That the bombardment for 8 years of ethnic Russians in East Ukraine, who've been there for 1,000 years, that's where Russia began in East Ukraine. 1,000 years ago, the Russian culture began there. They got every right to be there. Ever since the neo-Nazi coup in 2014, they have suffered that bombardment. Most of the young, affluent Russians who could afford to leave have left. So that continual genocide is going. And as you say, it was planned to massively escalate in February of last year. That was the precipitating factor of the war. And they knew it. Ukraine knew it. America knew it. But the newspapers pretended not to know it. They pretended to say, out of the blue, Russia on the 24th of February has invaded Poland, Ukraine for no reason. That became the mantra. So this whole war with Europe and America fighting against Russia is only possible because of the absolute truth blackout within the media. This is the extraordinary thing, which I've never encountered before, such a complete blackout of real narrative as regards who started this war. As Putin said, we didn't start anything, we're trying to finish it. I mean, they want a condition which they cannot get by negotiation where bombardment of East Ukraine stops. That's primarily what they want. The second thing they want is not to have American nuclear missiles on their doorstep. Both of those are absolutely reasonable, and they are the primary reason why Russia is fighting in Ukraine, because it cannot get that by motivated by negotiation, and therefore the terrible, dreadful combat takes place. Okay, if I may say, this time when we're discussing together, Bakhmut, the city in the Donbass, were terrific fighting be going on for months, and people say, well, what's so special about it? Well, the Ukraine forces were dug in and prepared for years by NATO for just this conflict. All the time, the Russians were waiting for the Minsk agreements, hoping someone would sign them or enact them. Well, that was the agreement for a united, independent, whole Ukraine at peace with itself and its neighbours. No, Europe wasn't interested in that. They've now made it clear. No, that was just a formality. They're actually preparing for the next war all those years. And around the Donbass, they're heavy fortifications. Anyway, Bakhmut is now falling. It's been a dreadful meat grinder. Estimates as many as 500 soldiers per day from Ukraine are being killed. These are people conscripted, and it's estimated once they get to the front line, they live for about 4 hours. This is a dreadful meat grinder. I mean, what was the point of it? The point of it was that Zelensky kept being told by his bosses, no, you can't pull back. Now, we can't be seen. We're giving an extra $1 billion for arms. Europe's giving billions of arms. And you can't be seen to move back. You've got to be seen to making some sort of progress. So he has to keep sending conscripts. The main army of Ukraine has been wiped out. He sends conscripts. I mean, young people, 16, 17-year-olds, are pulled off the streets, conscripted, sent to the front line. And all the main equipment, tanks, the HIMARS missiles, are being manned by mercenary soldiers or NATO troops or American troops. This is... the billions that are being given in aid are being used to pay mercenary soldiers to man these weapons. So this the tide is now turning now, and various experts are saying it looks like this retreat will be crucial in the turning of the tide of the war, which it's not for us to prognosticate, Jim, but it looks like if they pull out of Bakhmut, they have to admit that the maybe tens of thousands have died there, was for nothing, that will be a turning point in the war, yeah.
I agree. I think this is a decisive battle of the war in Bakhmut, absolutely nerd. And the whole fact of the blackout of the news media, in my opinion, represents the power of the Rothschilds owning the AP and Reuters, controlling the American media, where how often I've reported I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen. Another panel of 100 executives from NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen. Another panel of 100 executives from the New York Times, every one of whom is a dual U.S. Israeli citizen. Our media is completely controlled by the Jews, Nick, by the Zionists, by the Khazarians. It's outrageous. It's little wonder Americans have no idea what's really going on.
No, right. Okay, Jim. And to say that what's happening in Europe, just think of the journalist Alina Lipp, a young lady, good-looking, a beautiful young lady, a tourist, goes to the Donbass East and decides to start interviewing the locals about what their life is like. So she puts up interviews. Oh, what's it like having your country bombed, your district bombed every other day? And landmines scattered all about the place for your kids, where your kids play. And that's been going for the last 8 years. What's it like? What's life like? You know, schools bombed, public buildings bombed. What's life like? You know, and in response to her putting out those videos, what does the German government do? Because she's German, right? German government says, oh, this can't be happening. Oh, no, we're going to prosecute this lady. She must be somehow lying to us, or perhaps Russians are putting a gun to her head to make her do all this stuff. And we're going to prosecute her in her absence and empty out her bank account and so forth. That's what Germany has done, because it can't bear to face reality. And this is a very extraordinary situation where a breakdown in the capacity for cognition takes place. This is what I find the most extraordinary thing. I mean, like with the blowing up of that Nord Stream 2 pipeline, you know, Germany's invested years and worked billions and billions of euros. Germany initiated the whole thing, world's oldest pipeline, and Germany now says, oh, we know who did it, but we can't say. Oh, no, we can't say who did it. And then the British newspapers, oh, Russia did it. I mean, what an idiotic view. So coherent reasoning just breaking down. This is what I find the most extraordinary thing. It's not just that only one view is prohibited, it's that, you know, coherent logic, like what we just said about how the war began, that cannot take place in any any printed media. It takes place on the web, obviously. Loads of sort of wise comments on the web. You're just going to quote the one and only Pepe Escobar. So we get sage comments from Unst.com, loads of wise comments, you know. But you don't get anything, any coherent sense from any media in print. This is a very extraordinary situation we're in.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. The complete dominance of the media is just stunning. I mean, they say truth is the first casualty of war, but the propaganda onslaught taking place here is boggles the mind, Nick. It is so detached from reality. There's so little truth in the mainstream media here in the United States, in Europe. It is dumbfounding.
Yeah, I mean, if you think, from your little old England, where I live, what is the maddest possible thing you can imagine an English, a British politician wanting to do? Answer, start a war with Russia. I mean, can you imagine anything more crazy than that? The world's largest country, you know, massive load of nukes. Oh, yeah, sure, let's start a war with it. For no reason. For no reason. There's no material benefit. You've got, you know, Ukraine is obviously traditionally very close to Russia, part of Russia, and British politicians want to start a war. And this has been going on for not quite 10 years, but since, say, 2017, suddenly Islamic terrorism came to an end. Oh, that's gone. There's no Al-Qaeda threat anymore now. Forget it. No, it's Russia now. Suddenly we get a brand new enemy, and that just develops and pushes. Then we expel Russian diplomats. Oh, expel all the Russian diplomats. And you get this horrible sort of instantly forgettable politicians blathering about Russia's done this and Russia's done that. I mean, there's no meaningful reason for conflict. Every reason for what Vladimir Putin had hoped for throughout his career of lasting friendship between Europe and Russia. I mean, that's the only sensible course I can see.
Well, Seymour Hersh, of course, had a wonderful expose about the U.S. taking out the Nord Stream pipelines. But Mike Whitney and a supplemental that made it even more obvious why the economic threat of a merge between Russia and Germany, really bringing about peaceful relations between the United States, between Europe and the major Asian power, was going to be leaving the United States on the outside looking in for a new economic union that was going to bring about an era of prosperity, cheap Russian gas powering German industry, no need anymore, obvious NATO antiquated, unnecessary, no need to buy expensive military equipment from the United States.
Right.
So I think Mike Whitney really sealed the deal of spelling out the broader geopolitical background against which we can understand Nord Stream taking place.
Totally, yeah. I mean, we're calling it peace break, yeah. Oh, no. My country is $50 billion a year spent on military, which is more per capita than any other country except America. America, you get something getting on for $1 trillion a year gets handed over to the military. And these vast sums mean that the military create stories and create theatre to keep themselves going. That's a terrible thing. Now, the Seymour Hersh article showed us clearly the logic which had led to this war, which I don't think any of us had quite understood before. Let's just go over it. At the end of 2021, we all noticed that the Empire was announcing that Russia was going to invade Ukraine. And this was very puzzling. Nobody on RT seemed to know anything about it. And Russian pundits were saying, well, we don't invade other nations. That was one that. And it turns out at the end of that year, there was a special group set up by, was it Jake, a guy in the White House, a discussion group with CIA and the Pentagon there, Jake Sullivan, all right, to see about how to stop the Nord Stream pipeline. The Nord Stream pipeline was ready in September of 2021, okay? All you had to do was switch the tap on, 2021, right? $22 billion, worth of pipeline, just switch the tap on. Oh, no. I know English, British soldiers, military were saying to Germany, don't switch it on. And America was saying, don't. I mean, what on earth business was it of theirs? A German-Russia project. Anyway, Germany hardly has sovereignty. That's the tragic feature about the biggest nation in Europe. It's still occupied by military, chiefly US and British. So it hardly has the capacity to make its own decisions in its own interests. That's the terrible feature which has sort of led to such ruin. Okay, now, when that committee, it heard from somebody CIA, yes, we know how we can destroy the pipeline. We've got a recipe for doing it. It was in Seymour Hersh article. So they figured out how to do it, and it was in the way that it was deniable. This is the absolutely daft idea. They could blow up the world's longest pipeline and deny doing it.
Yes.
Which is what they did for 9/11. America essentially blew up its own, attacked itself, a bit of help from outside, and then denied having done it. And so could they do that again? Could they? This is the greatest terrorist event since 9/11, blowing up this giant pipeline, destroying it. Could they do it and be denied and deny doing it? And more sensible voices said, no, don't do this. It's a catastrophically bad idea. Okay, Victoria Nuland then, 7th of February, said, if Russia invades Ukraine, the Nord Stream pipeline will be finished, okay? And then Joe Biden reiterated that, didn't he, about 10 days later. He said, if Germany invades Ukraine, the Nord Stream pipeline will be finished. Okay, so that, by the way, Americans will be amused by this, that enabled the project to go ahead without asking Congress. This is what Seymour Hersh said, that because the president had announced it, therefore it wasn't a secret project, and somehow they could just go ahead because the president had said that and didn't need to get permission of Congress. That's a very sort of strange twist in the argument. Anyway, so the problem then was they had to get Russia to invade Ukraine because they wanted to blow up the pipeline. They had to do it pretty quick before Germany switched it on. So that was the event which led to the necessity of getting Russia to invade. And I think we previously discussed what happened then on the 17th of February, which is totally blacked out from all major reports that the bombardments of the Donetsk, that's Luhansk, Donetsk, various little mini states in the east, that the bombardment went up 100-fold, according to OSCE figures. Massive increase in the rate of bombing, preparatory to invasion, and there's a huge army, Ukraine army, massed on the border, all ready to invade. So that is what it was known in advance, that would precipitate a Russian invasion. But that was the purpose of it, to precipitate a Russian invasion in order to stop the pipeline. So that is the picture I get from the Simahash story.
Yeah, I largely agree with that. Where the U.S. was just terribly worried about the creation of this new economic behemoth, bringing about an era of peace between Europe and Russia that was going to be unprecedented, where the uselessness of NATO would be so obvious, where the U.S. military would lose all their profit-making from supplying Western Europe. It was going to be a major change in terms of creating a multipolar economic universe right here on Earth. And Putin and Germany and Europe had everything to gain in Russia. The U.S. had everything to lose, Nick. I mean, the cost-benefit, it's very obvious why the United States did this. But it was grossly wrong. It was not only an act of war, it was a war crime. It was attacking infrastructure in violation of international law and confirmed the status of the U.S. as the leading terrorist nation in the world.
Yeah, and strictly speaking, it should invite Article 5. NATO, an attack on one is an attack on war. Well, that was an attack on Germany. It's a German pipeline that got attacked in Europe. And strictly speaking, perhaps I'm being facetious, Germany should have been able to invoke that Article 5 for what America had done. Strictly speaking, that is an act of war to do such a thing. And it's only the craven, totally lack of sovereignty of Germany that enables such a thing to happen. It's a very strange situation where the politicians in Europe don't seem to have integrity or sovereignty.
Right back with Nick Kohlstrom after this break. We'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change.
that time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm delighted to be joined again by Nick Kohlerstrom. Nick, I want to kick a couple more articles into the mix for your thoughts and reaction.
Let me ask about one you were going to quote.
Yeah, I'm going to get there right away. World Economic Forum globalists to unleash Black Swan event to accelerate New World Order adoption. The World Economic Forum elites are saying the quiet part out loud again, revealing they're planning something major to speed up the global adoption of the New World Order. Professor Arturo Bris, a panelist at the 2023 World Government Summit in Dubai, said to complete the transformation, a shock would be necessary. I totally agree that the world order, the way it's built today, doesn't make any sense, he explained. It's not in line with the economic powers like India, Brazil, or Germany. They don't have a massive role in the international order. But to me, the big question is how we are going to go through this transformation. It cannot be gradual. It has to be driven by a certain shock that will happen. And it seems they have something up their sleeve to provide that shock, which would solidify them atop the social hierarchy by accomplishing their radical transformation. During the summit, WEF founder Klaus Schwab raised eyebrows, harping on resilience, saying there'll certainly be what we call a black swan surprise that will inevitably take place. He emphasized the phrase resilience, saying his Great Reset agenda will provide the resilience necessary for the world to recover from the planned Black Swan event. COVID showed us these psychopaths are willing to do whatever it takes to accomplish their goals, so it's not far-fetched they would do it again, perhaps on an even larger scale this time again. Out of the summit came another disturbing admission by the World Economic Forum. The power-crazed elites revealed that nationalism is a major obstacle for the advancement of their plans, which is why they hate Trump's America First policies so very much. Ian Bremmer, president and founder of Eurasia Group, claims that nationalism is challenging globalism, referring to Trump's America First agenda specifically as a thorn in the side of the globalist takeover. He goes on bragging about how global crisis events advance the globalist movement, including the pandemic, which he admits has made them stronger. These people are pushing for a one-world government which enables the WEF elite to enslave the rest of humanity. They regard us as peasants where they are the masters. Their willingness to admit their plans out loud is extremely concerning, suggesting pieces for this black swan event are already in place. The globalist plan is in full effect, and if they succeed, the America we know will no longer exist. Here's the PPSCOBAR, Nick. The stage is set for hybrid World War III. A powerful feeling rhythms your skin and drums up your soul as you're immersed in a long walk under persistent snow flurries, pinpointed by selected stops and enlightening conversations, crystallizing disparate vectors a year after the start of the accelerated phase of the proxy war between the U.S., NATO, and Russia. That's how Moscow welcomes you, the undisputed capital of the 21st century multipolar world. A long walking meditation impregnates on us how Vladimir Putin is dressed. Rather, a civilizational speech last week was a game changer when it comes to the demarcation of the civilizational red lines we are now facing. It acted as a powerful drill, perforating no less than short, actually zero-term memory of the collective West. No wonder it exercised a somewhat sobering effect, contrasting the nonstop Russophobia binge of the NATO stand space. Alexandre Dobrynin, director of foreign policy planning for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Russia, has correctly described Putin's address as a methodological basis for understanding, describing, and constructing multipolarity. For years, yeah, go right ahead, Nick. You can pick right up anywhere you like, my friend. I thought.
Yes, well, I think that's the dream of the WEF. It's not no dream of controlling, of having a hierarchical one world order that depends on them winning this war. That's why this war is so crucial. They can only do it if Russia is defeated. I mean, Russia believes, as they said, as Putin said in his speech, believes in nationalism, maintaining the independent national traditions of Russia. It doesn't want expansion. It doesn't want to attack anybody. It doesn't want to control other nations, but it does want a right to exist as an independent nation and to be proud of itself. In some ways, Putin and Trump have got a lot in common. Trump wanted America to be made great again, but without war. He didn't see the need for foreign wars. And so they've actually got quite a lot in common, and maybe why they're, in a sense, both heavily reviled characters in the media, that that they don't share this nightmare dream of the World Economic Forum. The New World Order, their blueprinting, abolishes national differences, wants to abolish racial differences, wants to abolish gender differences, or make them totally fluid. So people generally lose all sense of identity. They're just bots walking around. They're just units in a vast, sort of cyber hierarchical fascist police state. I think that's what they want us to head towards.
I think you're making a very important point, Nick, to wit. Donald Trump on the one hand, Vladimir Putin on the other, are two great nationalists for America and for Russia, and that represents a major obstacle to the progress of the New World Order, where no less a figure than Jacob Rothschild has declared that Vladimir Putin is an enemy of the New World Order, and that the New World Order cannot proceed without Ukraine. That makes Putin's fight a battle for all of civilization, Nick, in my opinion, and he ought to be applauded by every rational soul on earth.
Well, that's how it sounds, Jim. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to get through to the media. As you say, the terrific control of the media will not permit any alternative view. But on enlightened sites, I would say enlightened sites like UNS.com, for example, this is acknowledged, and you know we do understand this. And I mean, personally, people I know would sort of take for granted, what you've just said. You know, I think there's a whole community of intelligentsia who are not persuaded by what the media say, and have their own views. And I think that group is far larger than you might suspect, because it hasn't got a voice. But I mean, until a few years ago, surveys showed that the British people did not consider Russia to be an enemy at all. And now it's been pushed out by non-stop vilification. But I think, perhaps as always, the drive towards war is only done by a small elite minority. That are able to bamboozle the masses. Yeah.
Yes. Let's pick up a little more of what PB has to say. For years, some of us have been showing how the emerging multipolar world is defined, but goes way beyond high-speed connectivity, physical and geoeconomic. Now, as we reach the next stage, it's as if Putin and Xi Jinping, each in their own way, are conceptualizing two key civilizational vectors of multipolarity. That's a deeper meaning of the Russia-China Comprehensive Strategic Partnership, invisible to the naked eye. Metaphorically, it also speaks volumes that Russia's pivot to the east, toward the rising sun, now irreversible, was the only logical path to follow as, to quote Dylan, darkness dawns at the break of noon across the West. As it stands, with a wobbling, raging hegemon lost in its own prefabricated days, the real runners of the show feeding blurting flesh to irredeemably mediocre political elites, China may have a little more latitude than Russia, as the Middle Kingdom is not yet under the same existential pressure Russia has been put under. Whatever happens next geopolitically, Russia is at heart a giant obstacle on the warmongering path of the hegemon. The ultimate target is top threat China. Putin's ability to size up our extremely delicate geopolitical moment via a dose of highly concentrated, undiluted realism is something to behold. And then Foreign Minister Lavrov provided the cherry on the top, calling the hapless U.S. ambassador for a hardcore dressing down. Oh, yeah, this is war, hybrid and otherwise, and your NATO mercenaries, as well as your junk hardware, are legitimate targets. Dmitry Medvedev, deputy chairman of the Security Council, now more than ever relishing his unplugged status, made it all very clear. Russia, with being torn apart if it stops a special military operation before victory is achieved. And the message is even more acute because it represents the public cue to the Chinese leadership at the Zhongnanhai to understand whatever happens next. This is the Kremlin's unmovable official position. All these.
Sorry, just come in here.
Please.
Yeah, Pepe is a marvelous optimistic philosopher, and let me say he's Brazilian. So this is a Brazilian voice. He publishes in Asia Times and Eastern Asian newspapers as an optimistic philosopher, and his core theme is the way what he calls the Quad are coming together: India, Iran, China, and Russia, for a birth of a new culture. This is an optimistic vision of the future of humanity in Asia, in the East, as Russia turns irrevocably away from Europe. All the natural resources on which Europe totally depends are now being switched off, and they're going eastwards. Pipelines are going eastwards, and that's where the future is going to be. Although at the moment, China and India don't get on too well. Let's hope Pepe is right that this is that is a sort of real future. As Putin said, this is tectonic changes that are irreversible. That is the destiny that is now happening. I'm not sure that this is really war as such. Let's hope World War III doesn't actually break out, and Putin being amazingly calm and controlled may help it not to break out. Someone less calm and controlled, we might be into a more full-blown war situation by now. I think it's possible, having real, intense, conventional warfare going on in Ukraine helps World War III not to happen. That may seem a bit odd, but all the apocalyptic threats of using nukes fade a bit, because nukes would not help at all in this situation. A real conflict, because there's so much aggravation and ill feeling, might possibly just help to resolve things.
Well, as I mentioned earlier today, Britain, Germany, and France have all encouraged Ukraine to bite the bullet and resolve the war with Russia, negotiating to give them the chunks of Ukraine Russia wants. Frankly, Nick...
Are you sure that Britain... I thought Britain was... earlier on, last March, Boris Johnson went to Ukraine and told Zelensky not... They were in the middle of negotiations in Istanbul. Peace negotiations were going on and would probably succeed. Britain told them not to do it. Boris said, you've got to keep on fighting, you've got to win, fight to the last Ukrainian. Are you saying that you reckon, I'm just slightly querying, that Britain is one of those urging Zelensky to negotiate?
Yes, yeah. Britain, France, and Germany, all three, urging him to negotiate. But Nick, I don't think Russia can settle for anything less than all of Ukraine. I mean, there would be ongoing, guerrilla warfare, movements, efforts, sabotage, and all that. I think Russia has no choice but to take all of Ukraine and restore it.
Let me suggest a different possibility, that it takes the eastern mini states, which are now part of Russia. They voted by huge majorities to
right.
join Russia.
Right.
And the Russian parliament accepted that. So the boundary of Russia has now changed by the democratic will of the people of Ukraine,
yeah.
with the basic fundamental core principles of the United Nations, the right of democratic self-determination.
Yes.
As well as that, we accept that Russia has to go a bit further, maybe 100 kilometres or whatever, because to protect that land against missile attacks, it has to go a bit further. And if missile attacks continue, then it will have to go further still. But I would have thought, to be totally in accord with international law, which I think Russia is scrupulously careful about, that it does not have a right immediately to take over the whole of Ukraine. Now, once it takes over the lands that are now Russia, basically Ukraine, that is the whole affluent part of Ukraine. That is where the industry was, where the vast wheat-growing areas were. What will be left behind will be just some sort of bit of farmland that will not have wealth. So I would see a possible... the question of what does winning in this war mean for Russia is very equivalent and unclear. It could just mean, if Russia is being cautious, that it protects what is now Russia and has a certain boundary zone, 100 kilometres or so of no man's land, in order to maintain that as a safe area.
I do agree that Russia has been incredibly scrupulous regarding international law, treaties, and the like. It's the U.S. that has arrogantly lied again and again and acted in bad faith. Now, I'd love for you to lay out your case for why the special military operation is a just war, Nick, because I agree 100% of everything that I've heard you say about it to this point in time. But for the audience, I think it might be useful for a review from your point of view.
Well, it didn't start the war. It did everything it could before 2014 to help Ukraine be an independent, neutral country. It had a pipeline of gas going through it from which Ukraine could benefit. It was making deals as best it could for Ukraine to be a country in between East and West. Then, with Victorian Union's coup, you know, fuck the EU, they had a government installed which tried to abolish the Russian language and tried to abolish the traditional Russian culture. And let's just point out that later on, when Zelensky was elected, he could only speak Russian. He had to learn Ukrainian and then get on with the program of abolishing Russian culture. So Russia was incredibly restraining. A lot of people criticize Russia for this, but not for having waited 8 years while the bombardment of the East continued. And you hardly read about that anywhere except you saw on Russia Today. And occasionally you'd hear somebody saying, oh, there's a civil war going on in East Russia, in East Ukraine. Well, no, it wasn't a civil war. It was missiles bombarding civilians and towns and cities and villages continually. So there is a right of self-defense in the in the UN Charter. And Russia essentially invoked that right of self-defense. It did not accept the request for the little mini-states to be independent. It did recognise that for Crimea, okay? Crimea had more of a legal case to be independent. That was at once recognised, and then Ukraine applied to become part of the Russian Federation, which it did right away, didn't it? 2014 or 15, became part of Russia. And the little mini-states didn't. Russia didn't want to do that because it would have annoyed Europe too much, and Russia was hoping to get the pipeline project completed as a gesture of friendship. So we let the situation continue, and it got worse and worse, with NATO continually training the troops of Kiev, in secret, while pretending not to. And then finally, Russia acted to defend the eastern mini-states. I think that was a legitimate act of self-defense, although it did involve Russia coming into the mainland of Ukraine. I think that was justified under self-defense. But there are other secondary reasons, which you have mentioned. For example, dozens of deadly biological warfare centers of research that America was carrying out, you know, anthrax or drones that carry mosquitoes with specially bred toxic poisons in the mosquitoes to send them over Russian territory. The biological weapons and then the nuclear weapons are being installed on the border of Russia in Poland and Romania, I think. And that was the immediate threat also. So I think Russia's act was basically justifiable as self-defense. One would like to see it discussed by lawyers, by international lawyers, of whether it was justified. But I would certainly think it was under the UN terms of self-defense.
Nick, I think your case is ironclad. I don't think there's any room for doubt about it. I think you're not going to find any willingness to debate because it's so clear-cut. Something that dumbfounds me is why the Scandinavian nations, Norway, Finland, Sweden, should get themselves involved in all of these matters. They were in a privileged position of being neutral, and they've compromised it all for a mess of pottage. Nick, what has happened to the rationality of Scandinavia?
Absolutely, yeah. What has happened? It was a lovely country. It starts taking tons of immigrants in, huge amounts of immigrants, and now they say they want to join NATO. Norway apparently was a key player in blowing up the pipeline, according to Sigmar Hirsch. Why the hell do they want to do that? They want to start spending loads of money in NATO, Is it some sort of feeling of togetherness they get? So I think this is a mystery, but whatever the answer is, it's about the doom of Europe, the beautiful continent of Europe, which existed for 2,000 years, has been like the centre of world culture. It's a place where people wanted to live, you know. And I think, as you point out, these are acts of extinguishing of traditional culture, and driven by fear. Fear blocks out coherent logic and thoughts, that is, in a way, what the military always want. The military always want to tell you why you need more arms and the terrible threat you've got from your neighbour, which actually doesn't exist. I'm as bewildered as you are. Why did Sweden and Norway succumb to this? You thought they were far away enough from any action or pressure, but anyway, that's what they're doing.
They had a history of neutrality, Nick. They didn't need to compromise. They didn't put themselves in the middle of Russia on the one hand and NATO on the other. It was an act of monumental stupidity. No doubt it was paved with bribes. I have no doubt there was bribery galore taking place. Have you any doubt?
Yeah. Some people say that with the pipeline blowing, America blowing up the pipeline, with better luck, this will disintegrate the terrific unity that NATO is experiencing. All the NATO nations are paying an enormous amount of money for a supposed unity they experience. I mean, the initial foundation of NATO, 1949 North Atlantic Treaty, the idea was that after two world wars, this would help to stop the different nations attacking each other ever again, if they shared their military posture. That was sort of the theory. And the theory also was that because European nations couldn't trust each other, they would invoke America, sort of umbrella, nuclear umbrella, as if that would somehow make them safer. Well, there's a sort of argument that it did stop war for a while, half a century, but now I think it's turned into something terrible. And Europe would be far better off without American, this alleged umbrella connection.
Both sides seem to have abandoned the rationality of mutually assured destruction for an all-out.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Nick and I are glad to take your calls. The number 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Well, we're glad to hear your thoughts about Ukraine, NATO, World Economic Forum, the whole bit. Mitchell, if you have thoughts of your own, I'd be glad to have them, my friend. Your reflections on what Nick and I have been reviewing?
Well, pray like hell and make sure you have your bug out bag available.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate, but we live in this time where problem reaction solution, you know, and the strategy of tension has elevated itself to such a high standard that people in general aren't really terrified of the normal shit that they used to be terrified of. You know, it used to be we had other worries that were more domestic, maybe as a description, than international. But absolutely, Jim, we are, you know, we're looking at in serious trouble. And, you know, the loss of confidence in our government is terrible. Hey, I see we got Nick back.
Yeah. Just getting my cup of tea. Oh, no, what's happening?
No, it's a little image issue there, Nick. Not a problem.
Get my cup of tea, right?
Yeah. I do think the case for Russian intervention in Ukraine is simply overwhelming, and the perfidy of the West is breathtaking. When you even have Angela Merkel, former chancellor of Germany, acknowledging there was never any intent to adhere to the Minsk agreements, how can Russia possibly place any faith whatsoever, the least amount of faith in any agreement with the West in the future, Nick? It seems to me preposterous. And after the dissolution of the Soviet Union and the claim we wouldn't expand eastward, we've gone from 13 NATO nations to 30 NATO nations in gross violation. I mean, how would we feel if Russia were setting up missile batteries along the Canadian or Mexican border? I mean, Americans are incapable of thinking these things through from the Russian point of view.
Very odd, yeah. I mean, what I noticed in Europe, we had a wonderful treaty, INF treaty, that got all nukes out of Europe for 30 years. You know, INF treaty, international nuclear forces, all that horrible cruise missiles gone. You know, no more nukes. And before that, there was a terrible fear of nuclear war. In 2019, it was allowed to expire. And Putin and Lavrov were very concerned about this. Can we not extend this treaty, you know, renew it? But nobody in Europe was interested. And it's just been allowed to expire. And now American nukes inevitably are being put in Europe. I mean, what is the point of that? Where do they think it's going to go? Why don't we have anti-war politicians? Here's what I find most baffling. Certainly in England, there's no anti-war politician, and I don't know, there is hardly in America either, is there, that want to spend the wealth of the nation constructively for us to be able to enjoy life and repair the roads and stuff, instead of giving it to the military. Military are the very worst human beings to give the money to. And it puzzles me that Europe doesn't seem to have any... even the Greens. I was in the Green Party, right? That's one political party I've been in. And we were totally anti-war in the last century. And now, in Germany, it's the Greens who are, you know, rapidly anti-Russian, saying don't switch on the pipeline, and so forth. So...
And, of course, buying into the global warming nonsense. I mean, it's just humongous pile of pseudoscience. We do have a caller, Brian, on the phone. Brian, join us. Give us your thoughts.
Well, when he mentioned the fact that the Khazars killed Tsar Nicholas, I think it was, and his family. Before that, Tsar Alexander actually set the Jews free. They were kind of restricted in Russia because they knew they were such a problem, and they showed their appreciation by assassinating him too. So they don't seem to appreciate anything you do for them. And I go back again to that Menachem Schneerson, that Shabbat leader that gave that speech in 1994, spelling out everything going on right now, how they were going to have war between Ukraine and Russia, and they were going to destroy the Ukrainians. And, you know, it's just they plan these things out over a long period of time. So
yeah, one of the most extraordinary features, the long-term planning. Yeah. Right.
And what I found interesting.
Preordaining a war between Ukraine and Russia, you know.
Yeah, what I find interesting in their planning is that Banderas group, okay, which is the neo-Nazis, whatever, they were actually funded by the CIA back in the late 40s, early 50s. And it shows the collusion between the CIA and the KGB back then, because, you know, the KGB, NKVD, they were such a completely... isolated country. I mean, you couldn't just get CIA agents to come in and get the Banderas group underground going. It had to be collusion between those two intelligence agencies. You know, the Khazars control it all. They controlled the CIA, they controlled the KGB, and they were working on it way back then. Banderas group was funded by the CIA after World War II.
Right. You know, Iran has got a very sensible policy, partly why it's culturally stable, but it doesn't allow Jews to get up to any senior positions, okay? There's laws restricting how far they can climb up, you know, the hierarchy. And Jews seem relatively happy in Iran. Israel tried to exhort them to leave Iran and come back to Israel. And generally, I think they didn't want to, because they were quite happy in their position in Iran. So this might be a country which has got a kind of a livable, sensible policy, I would say.
With Bibi back in the saddle, we're hearing more nonsense about Iran having enough fissionable material for a nuclear bomb, but Iran doesn't want nuclear bombs. Iran has sufficient conventional weaponry of many different kinds to destroy Israel many times over, Nick. It's just Bibi doing his saber rattling, which has been going on endlessly for 40 years now. I mean, it's just a disgrace.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, let's come back to the subject. There's something you were showing a bit earlier about China, Jim, I just missed. Talking about the Chinese emperor.
I can pick back up with the Chinese mandate. Yes, very good, Nick. All these vectors are involving, this is Pepe again, and ramifications of the bombing of the Nord Stream, the only military attack whom industrial terrorism ever perpetrated against the EU, leaving the collective West paralyzed, dazed, and confused. Perfectly in tandem with Putin's address, the Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs chose a geopolitical existential moment to finally take the gloves off with a flourish, enter the U.S. hegemon in his Farrell's essay, Coombe Report, which became an instant massive hit across Chinese media, examined with relish all across East Asia, which was
a brilliant essay. Yeah, everyone should read it.
Go.
A real statement about China, a wise statement about what America's place in the world and how it really behaves and how countries really see it. I think that's a wonderful statement that China's come out with. Some people said it was a declaration of war. I don't think it was. I don't think China believes in war. It's interesting. Some of these these Asian Eastern countries I mentioned have a philosophy of not as such believing in war. China, Iran, India, they've got a track record of not invading other countries for quite a long time, I suggest.
Yes.
So I think this Chinese essay, which is absolutely candid and wise and accurate, should be, compulsive reading for all U.S. politicians. Yeah.
Yeah, it came as a really surprise because China has been so reticent about overtly criticizing the United States. And then there it was, staring us right in the face in a fashion that was inescapable, Nick. So I think you're making a great point. This blistering enumeration of all the hegemon lethal follies for decades constitutes a point of no return for trademark Chinese diplomacy. So far characterized by passivity, ambivalence, actual restraint, and extreme politeness. Such turnaround is yet another proud achievement of the outright xenophobia and mendacious hostility exhibited by American neocons and neoliberal cons. Quan Lee notes that this document may be regarded as a traditional form, but now filled with contemporaneous wording the Chinese sovereigns used in their millenary past before going to war, the suggestion being that it may be presaging. It is, in fact, an axio epistemo political proclamation justifying a serious war, which in the Chinese universe means a war ordained by a higher power capable of restoring justice and harmony in a troubled universe. After the proclamation, the warriors are equipped to strike mercilessly at the...
Well, I'm not quite accepting that this is China wanting to go to war. I don't think it wants war. What it always wants is diplomacy, as they said, in a win-win situation where we both benefit by mutual trade. But it has held the mirror up to America, in a searing, with searingly truthful manner.
Yeah, I agree, Nick. It was searing and accurate and penetrating and devastating and very much like Putin's speeches themselves, which have been masterpieces of geopolitical history. I mean, this is the only guy who's been speaking the truth about what's been going on in the world in the 20th, 21st century. It's just unbelievable.
It's remarkable, isn't it? We get from China and Russia, we get totally truthful and wise statements about the condition of the world that it's in now, and thereby we apprehend what is saying. What Pepe Escobar said, this is a very axial, pivotal moment when everything is changing and values are changing. And I think for all the Southern Hemisphere nations and people outside this immediate conflict, they're going to see that European leaders are have no integrity in their words and just want another war, want another country to bomb. And loads of countries have had enough of being pushed around and bullied. And if they are given an option of coming out of from under the shadow of US UK, I think they will at once do so. And that's why so many countries are now queuing up to join the new BRICS alliance.
Yes, I agree, Nick. I think that the bombing of the Nord Stream is going to turn out to have been a pivotal moment in history, that it's led to the bipolar world. All the sanctions imposed on Russia have backfired. They've harmed Europe. They haven't benefited the West at all. And the dollar is just disappearing into oblivion. The quality of life is going to be devastating for Americans. And it's going to endure for generations, Nick. This is really world-changing events we're living through right now.
I could just point out, in the light of earlier comments you made, this interview, that 26th September, when the Parthenon was bombed, was the day of the Jewish New Year. It's the new moon nearest the autumn equinox, okay? Jewish New Year. And it was the birthday of the husband of Victoria Nuland. What's his name?
Robert Kagan. Robert Kagan.
Yeah, his birthday. So it's a birthday present to him, 26th of September. The two top neocons, two instigators of the Ukraine's debacle, that chose to do this. As you say, it's got to be pivotal, and it's going to continue working through our culture. I think it's hard to foresee what's happening, but I think Pepe is a very impressive visionary for overview of the way things are changing, and of the way, bear in mind, he is Brazilian, the way other countries in the Southern Hemisphere and outside the empire are changing their loyalties.
I have no doubt the future belongs to Russia and China. The West and the U.S. are being left behind in the rubble, the dustbin of history, Nick, and we brought it upon ourselves.
Wow, amazing. Well, let's hope that manages to happen without World War III. A lot of people say World War III is inevitable. I mean, I just don't know. I can't see. Let me just point out that China's got high IQ nations. It's 106 average, which is possibly the highest. I think there are several very high IQ nations in that part of East Asia. Traditionally, America and Europe have an IQ of 100. But I would guess that's going down quite sharply. It will go down quite sharply, I would expect.
And in part due to COVID, Nick, which is targeted against whites.
Is it?
I have no doubt.
All right. But I think China will be the industrial powerhouse for the
you had a situation where Russia had these vast natural resources it was going to share with Western Europe, but now it's going to be with China. I mean, the combination is simply overwhelming, because China has the industrial capacity, Russia has the natural resources. It's a marriage made in economic heaven. It's one the West sought to forestall, but brought about as an inevitable result of these atrocious actions in response to Ukraine by ignoring Russia's legitimate national security concerns.
Any other questions? You said some questions.
Brian or Mitchell, do either of you have questions you might like to raise with Nick? Mitchell. Brian.
I was reading on the internet about some politician in Australia that knew a Jesuit, and this was like in the 70s, and this Jesuit was telling him that the United States, they were going to destroy it, that China was going to be made the next economic powerhouse. And the article went on talking about these black nobility families, that there's a Henry Breakspear who's like the black nobility family member that lives in Macau, China. And I've read that a lot of these black nobility families now are migrating to China. And I wondered if you had any information on things like this.
Neither of us, Brian. Sorry to disappoint.
Okay.
If Mitchell's there, he's welcome to rejoin the conversation. Mitchell, any further thoughts of yours?
Okay, let me ask you people, as you're American, we're looking at a question, could you have an anti-war political party? I mean, traditionally, Republicans, I suppose, are fairly pro-war, but Trump wasn't. Was that why he was deposed? Could you imagine Trump coming back as a anti-war candidate who just wanted to get the American economy going again?
Amen.
And not bomb other nations?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that at all or not?
Yes, yes, yes. I do imagine that, Nick. And I think the fact that he and Putin are the two great nationalists astride the world stage speaks very strongly in that favor. Well, Ron DeSantis is going to make a run for it. I see DeSantis as a future, not the present. I do not believe he could defeat Trump for the GOP nomination in 2024, though I regard Trump as making a mistake by attacking DeSantis and elevating him to the same level as Trump, which, in my opinion, DeSantis does not deserve. Mitchell, I think I sense you're back with us. Please, your thoughts.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Yeah, hey, Trump was polling at 50% the other day against all the declared candidates, including DeSantis. Unfortunately, it's all such a Truman Show type atmosphere, and we are subject to so many plays in so many different ways. It's hard for people to get a grip and a base of reality of what the world that they're living in. So they default to what they perceive to be the authority or the authority figures on, you know, everything that they're just confused to hell and back about. And it's an intentional tactic. I saw a meme the other day that essentially said, you know, Cloward and Piven are having a massive party at the welfare office right now just because of the way things are going.
Yeah.
So,
destroying the United States by overwhelming the welfare system by all this mass migration, of course.
Absolutely. And don't forget Kazakhstan. You know, the United States was allegedly negotiating with Russia over Kazakhstan or the movement east, and they supposedly had an agreement in December, and in January they attempted, Nuland and friends attempted to overthrow Kazakhstan. So that was the last political, I guess you could call it diplomatic act that the Americans did. Go ahead.
Nick, just remain focused on domestic politics. Remember, the American people repudiated Biden. Nobody gave a damn about Joe Biden. If it weren't for electronic voting machines and all these drop boxes and other modes of theft, he would not be president of the United States. He didn't earn it. There was vast repudiation.
How many people do you recommend voted for him? 40 million or what?
Biden? Probably, yeah. Maybe 35. It was pathetic. It was pathetic. Nobody gave a damn about Biden or Harris. Nobody gives a damn
about. How about Trump? Do you reckon he really? He apparently got 70 million votes.
Oh yeah, he got more. Trump actually would have got around 80 million, the most of any candidate in history. Yeah.
Come on. Listen, Obama or Bill Clinton, they got 60 odd million votes, didn't they? Nothing like that number.
You got to understand, Nick, the electronic voting machines are stealing elections in the United States every damn time we have one. And this time around, they stole 57 House seats. No doubt James Carville implied as much, and three or four Senate seats. The country, nobody thought we were headed in the right direction, and yet they remain in power. It is disgusting. This is why I say we have to get rid of electronic voting machines if we are going to have a chance, a ghost of a chance of regaining any influence over the destiny of the United States. That is the key problem. Paper ballots, hand counts of necessity.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just come back to the old subject, Jim. Let me ask you, what proportion of Americans can locate Ukraine on the map? 10% or what?
Probably in that vicinity, Nick. I know it's pathetic. The state of American education is unreal. You made some key points before about, you know, creating uncertainty about basics, about climate, about gender, you know, even about war and peace. And it's embarrassingly bad. But American education is at the lowest level in history, without any doubt.
Yeah. Well, isn't it amazing? After giving $100 billion to Ukraine, or over $100 billion, there's still a huge majority of Americans can't locate it on a map.
Yes. And a lot of Americans think that Zelensky is a great freedom fighter and a hero for democracy. Nick, it's insulting beyond words. It's simply insulting.
Yeah. Well, maybe things will change.
Speaking of the map,
just to dollarize, I think once one or two countries starts to de-dollarize, there could be a chain reaction. Question what other currency can be used.
Yeah.
And that will be a very, very crucial thing.
Nick, I'm ecstatic to have you back on with me, Nick. You didn't have the opportunity before. This has been simply wonderful. I can't thank you enough. Mitchell, Brian, great calls. Very pleased to hear from you all. Nick, if you have a final word you'd like to say, tell us where we can find your book.
Amazon. I have not yet found Amazon. So, yeah,
and
do write a review on it.
Nick Olson, the book, Ukraine, The Just War. Check it out. Thank you all for being here. Back on Friday. See you then.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...